It's time to catch the beat for Market Street on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Your community radio station is in the heart of the action in downtown Champaign, and Catch the Beat brings highlights of local news, arts, culture, and issues to pay attention to. Catch the Beat is brought to you in part by the listeners of WEFT and Jane Addams Bookshop in downtown Champaign. For more than 40 years, Jane Addams Bookshop has been a destination for readers and book lovers of all ages. Featuring three floors of gently used books, greeting cards, journals, and more. Jane Addams Bookshop is at 208 North Neal in downtown Champaign, online at Jane Addams, that's A-D-D-A-M-S, books.com. As always on WEFT, the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air Inc., Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the WEFT Associates. I'm your host, Cope Cumston. I'm pleased to welcome to Catch the Beat the curators of a current show, Unfinished Revolutions, at the Spurlock Museum at the University of Illinois. Beth Watkins, Manager of Exhibit Interpretation and Visitor Experience, and Dale Mize, Graduate Student in American History, who helps curate exhibits at Spurlock. Spurlock has a way of putting a twist on both cultural history and connecting it to current issues, and also bringing in the local angle. My eye was caught by this particular show in this month of rising energy around the full celebration of the 250th anniversary of the founding of the United States. The idea for Unfinished Revolutions came out of a publication by the American Association of State and Local History, which issues suggestions for museums on organizing exhibits around this 250th celebration. The exhibit opened in April and will be on view until November, but this summer is a perfect time to enjoy the magnificence of the Spurlock Galleries, some generous air conditioning, and take in the wide breadth of local and national unfinished revolutions. Dale and Beth, I turn it over to you. Tell us how you brainstormed this exhibit and the subjects that it covers.
We started this a few years ago in conjunction with a professor in Nebraska who is a U of I alum who has been a frequent collaborator with us. He's an American historian, and he and I had been chatting about the upcoming 250th, and he said it would be a really interesting chance to work with other campus units, the collecting units, so some of the different libraries, archives, things like that, to bring together some kind of interesting assortment of objects, documents, photographs, whatever, relating to U.S. history in some way, because U.S. foundational stuff is not something Spurlock has represented in our collections very well. And we've been toying with that idea for a while and reaching out to potential partners. And then our director, Elizabeth Sutton, along with Dale, who is our exhibits graduate assistant and is also a U.S. historian doing his PhD at U of I in history. And we all just, and other staff, we were brainstorming and we realized we needed obviously a better, a more specific focus than that. And this idea of unfinished revolutions that was in the AASLH publication that you mentioned really spoke to us, particularly to our director, who was interested in pursuing ideas about what are we fighting for? We talk about a revolution, but what are we revolting against and what are we revolting for? So that actually worked really well as a frame for bringing in all these different partners and objects that they had in their collections or stories they were interested in platforming. And so that became the theme that we clustered around. So it's still a big theme, right? And there's plenty of revolutions that are not mentioned in the exhibit, but working with the partners that we found, such as Student Life and Culture Archives, Rare Book and Manuscript Library, the Music Library, History, Philosophy and Newspaper Library, all on campus, that was a really great way to bring forward some stories about the struggle to define and protect and expand rights in the United States, which of course also felt very timely to us here in 2026.
So sections of the exhibit span, beginning with the American Revolution, Indigenous resistance, African-American civil rights, women's suffrage and gender equality, voting rights, immigration, labor organizing, and LGBTQ plus activism. And you expanded it to connect with themes connecting historical movements to ongoing political and social debates, like the availability of health care. You have a very interesting panel about where that is and is not available, and that is a large debate. Dale, I understand that was your contribution. How did you come up with that and decide what data to present?
The themes were largely determined by our partnerships. Once we kind of focused in on this Unfinished Revolutions idea, we talked through with some of the different units that we collaborated with to talk about items in their collection and what they might be able to offer. Like the LGBTQ section is largely donated from the Student Life and Culture Archives. The American Revolution section is a little bit of our collection and some of the rare book manuscript library collections. Some of our civil rights and gender equality stuff is from the History Newspaper Library. The sections kind of started to come out that way, but then Beth and I were kind of thinking about things that we had in our own collections here at the museum and what we were interested in presenting. I think about a lot of issues in the world currently and things that I think people have been talking for as long as I've been alive and definitely before. So things like healthcare, civil rights, immigration, those things are ongoing constantly. There's a quote on our immigration panel from the 2026 Grammys because I wrote that panel the day after the Grammys because I felt really moved by Bad Bunny's speech, which is why that little quote was on
Yes,
me.
Bad Bunny is in your show.
So that panel kind of came from that and some other historical topics that I was reading through my preliminary exams for my degree. But healthcare is something that I think a lot of people talk about, but don't truly understand the impact of, and the fact that like we're one of the only countries in the world that hasn't figured out free healthcare yet is pretty astounding. So that was another
Or it's
partnership.
rather not that we haven't figured out, we refuse to figure
Refuse.
it out.
Yeah. And there's a professor on campus, Dr. Flavia Andrade, who wrote that panel for us because she also researches that same topic.
It's wonderful how you got faculty really interested in this. There are many quotes from U of I faculty.
Our director, Elizabeth Sutton, that was something she was interested in trying to include in a very major way in this exhibit. And some of these are people who are on our board or that we've worked with in other ways. And some of them were, or maybe they've done a program here at the museum. And some of them were, I believe, people that we hadn't maybe formally worked with before. And so many of them came forward and said they would be happy to write something about, specifically about how their work connects to issues of rights. Whether or not those rights are named specifically in the founding documents of the United States is, yes, some of them, but not all of them, right? So she wanted to connect how people on campus are working on some of these things as well. Kind of an unspoken nod, I think, to the land grant mission, right, of a university like ours. Like, we are to serve the public, and here are things faculty are doing to make your life better, whether or not you know it.
There are quite a few local events spotlighted in the exhibit. University students protested actively in 1970 and around then over U.S. military action in Cambodia, the killings of student protesters at Kent State University, and the killing of a Black resident, Edgar Holtz, by Champaign police. There are many around gay liberation beginning in the 1970s of the U of I campus. I really appreciate how you always connect your shows to our campus. How did you decide what to gather for that?
That was a combination. So one of our partners is the Alumni Center's or the Alumni Association's Heritage Center, which is run by Ryan Ross, who's a longtime collaborator with us at Spurlock. And so I reached out to him about collections or stories that they've already put together that we could provide a platform for. So there's a video which you probably saw about a student protest that they kindly loaned us. And then we had two undergrad interns from the history department in a public history internship who worked on this exhibit as well. And one of them worked quite a bit with student life and culture archives materials to choose some things that spoke to gay rights, particularly being organizations around that topic on the U of I campus. Because like you say, connecting to campus is really important to us. And we have so much experience with undergrads in particular who come to an exhibit and say, I had no idea that people 50 years ago were working on this right here. People just like me were experiencing some of these issues in slightly different ways, but they also were working on things that I care about and that I work on. And so helping students connect to local stories that then connect obviously to broader national or international stories is something that we are learning to do more of because we know people care about it and it's important to connect those things.
And for me, I think that a sense of place impacts who you are as a human. Geography and the environment that you grow up in has an effect on you. There's a new form of psychology I'm just recently learning about, which is psychological geography. It kind of talks about this idea. Environmental history is really big on this, of human environment interactions and how they shape each other. So I think that by grounding an exhibit in something that somebody can connect to locally, it helps them have a better grasp of how it builds into a more of a national story and how they can play a role.
I particularly appreciated your span of places where you invited the community to participate in this exhibit. There's a whole wall of artwork by local public school students, and then there are post-it notes with the question, "What are you fighting for?" And I have to admit, I sat down at the desk and I got my post-it note and I wrote it out. So
Good.
tell us about that.
That's been remarkable how many people are leaving post-it notes for us. We go through and check them every couple of days to see what's been added. And we have a series of prompts up there. That's one of them that you mentioned. We invited people to comment on what would they be doing for the U.S. birthday coming up in, just a few days here as we record. A couple of other questions. And we're getting such an interesting array of feedback. If you base on handwriting, I think we have some little visitors telling us their opinions, which is really fun. Some people leave us little drawings. Some people write very long, post-it several ones together and make a longer sheet of paper. Making sure that people feel their voices heard is important as well. And I think it very much builds on what Dale's saying about a sense of place and what you can do. And one thing you can do is listen to other people. And here's a really easy way. You can leave a note as you did, and I bet you read some of the other ones as
I
well.
read a lot of them. They were
Doesn't
fascinating. And
have to take a long time.
I love the student artwork. It always stuns me how tuned in young kids are to the issues going on in the world. And then just the vitality of their artwork is so much fun. You could make a permanent wall of artwork like
We could.
this.
Yeah, we had some particular events where we invited people from the public to come in and respond to the prompt of, what are you fighting for? What do you hope to do to take America forward and whatever that may mean to you? I fully admit there are some of the artworks that I'm not sure what they mean at all, but I like that because it encourages me to think about it. And think about it is one of the points of an exhibit like this, right? Like here are some groundwork, here's some context, here's some examples, but what do you think? What would you do? What will you do?
One thing about the post-it notes is that we have to go through and take some of the older ones down that we have read because we get so many responses, but we've kept them all in a binder that's slowly getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's really amazing to see how many people have filled out those out. We have so many responses at this point.
This is by far the most visitor feedback we've ever had in an exhibit. Honestly, it's heartwarming to see that people are willing to pause for a minute. We always assume everyone's in a hurry all the time. And so the fact that they feel comfortable and inspired to maybe sit, or maybe even just stand, take a pencil, write a few notes on a post-it, and then share it for others. And yes, we live in a anonymous comment kind of world, but here's a great example of people can still be very thoughtful in a space where they're invited to share an opinion. And maybe it feels a little different to put it in a museum than it does to put it on a Facebook post or something like that, but it is really heartwarming that people want to contribute.
Spurlock is very well set up for people feeling at home and comfortable. You have very comfortable chairs in your main atrium and in that first little gallery space, and you usually have things that you invite people to come look at books, look at resources. And so I think you do very well at really inviting the public in and inviting them to feel a part of what your shows are about.
Thank you. That's important to us. And I'm sure that's not true for everybody, but that's been important for us to work on. So I think it's increasing, which is nice. I mean, we know everyone who's lived in this town for a while knows that not everyone feels welcome on campus. We know in the museum world, not everybody feels like museums are for them for whatever variety of reasons, whether they're just not interested or they've never heard about a museum doing something that interests them, or they have felt surveilled at a museum or something like that. And we're trying lots of different things, often small scale, to make Spurlock feel like a welcoming place and for it to be a bit of a gateway to campus. We are literally, of course, on the edge of campus right off of Lincoln Avenue. But if you can come to the museum and feel good, maybe you'd be willing to go one more block over and go to Krannert Center, and then another block or two over and go to a film on the quad this summer or something like that. And I'm glad you mentioned the furniture, because that too is an initiative of our current director, who really wanted us to get some seating that invited people to stay. Benches are not as great as a beanbag for some of us, so.
Yeah, well, these are elegant, these chairs.
And having books out is something that's pretty easy to do, and we could have done that ages ago, and we didn't for whatever reason. And we have a new staff person who every couple of months rotates some of the books that are out to highlight different areas of the museum's gallery. And in this exhibit, the Music Library and Performing Arts Library loaned us some great books that speak to art that comments on American rights in some way. That's a browsing library people can just sit and look at. So that's fun. One of the points of this exhibit, initially, when we first spoke with our historian colleague in Nebraska, was to pull out to Spurlock has a benefit of being a place that's relatively easy to get to. There's free parking near here on nights and weekends. We are open on the weekends, which, for example, the gallery at the Rare Book Library is not. So we thought we might be able to offer spaces that were more accessible to a wider audience for some of our sibling units on campus that have a harder time getting people in the door simply because of their location or when their building is open. Working with the libraries and the archives and all these people is always fun, and we've done a lot of things over the years with them at various scales and sizes and things like that.
There's a large collection in this exhibit of art as protest. You focus on our local artist, Billy Morrow Jackson, who is well known for his work during the civil rights movement, but you bring in quite a bit more. How did you come about all of those?
So the Billy Morrow Jackson prints came to us through our collections committee. Those were worked on by our registrar, who knows a lot about that artist and those works. The other art in the exhibit comes from Washoe, who is an artist in California, an indigenous artist. And her father have been to the museum in the past, which is how we kind of started to acquire some of her artwork. Our director is from California, so also has that connection and was able to acquire some of those pieces. And then there's another poster in our protest section called American Rage. That is in our teaching collection. It is just a copy of artwork, but I thought it was really powerful and really wanted to include it in the exhibit because it reminds us a lot of both recent protests and civil rights issues, such as the murder of George Floyd, but also the fact that we still are fighting for these things hundreds of years later from the founding of the country, which, was for all.
Having some contemporary voices in the exhibit is really important, because we guessed that a lot of the emphasis around the 250th would be on 1776, understandably. But we want to be clear that the struggle for rights continues. And I think that's important to acknowledge. And I don't think that's a surprise to anyone coming to the exhibit to think that rights are ongoing, but to think about how many of them are currently being challenged and fought over in new ways and with new vocabulary or on new fronts. And artists are always important at expressing some of these things. So having contemporary voices and a diversity of contemporary voices was important to us, because America has never been just one thing or one group of people. And we need to really think about what that means and how we can make that work. You
It's
go.
also interesting to think about the different art forms that we have in the exhibit. So there's not only the paintings, there's also figurines and other little things that were made, especially the Votes for Women case, I think is really interesting. There's a dog and a cat figurine in there that say Votes for Women, but the purpose of those was actually an anti-feminism approach. They were calling women dogs because they were always barking at people or cats because they're always clawing at people. The way that these issues have been like broken down or made fun of over time, also very reminiscent of now, like creating memes, for
Yeah.
example.
Propaganda is interesting, right? I think that's a it almost seems to be a human a basic human instinct in a way, right? To characterize, to caricature, and to poke fun at the things you either fear or disagree with is something we all do.
Do each of you have a favorite portion of this exhibit?
I do really enjoy those suffrage sheet music pieces. I think those are really interesting. So, quite a several of them were written in conjunction with Hull House in Chicago, so they're fairly local. You know, there's this thing about singing, which is to literally use your voice and to join with others, often a choir as a group doing something together. I think that's really interesting. I have no sense of whether these songs changed the minds of anybody who was anti-suffrage. I really don't know, but there's something about joining with others and saying something together that makes you feel good. So I think that speaks to anyone who likes music, anyone who resonated with Bad Bunny in the performances of the last year, like anyone who's ever, whether you've done a formal protest song or not, but if you've ever sung with other people, you actually know what that's about.
My favorite section is the Life Worth Living section. That was my baby from the beginning. I kind of conceived of that section at first, thinking about informal rights like the right to healthcare, which we don't have in this country. Also, then building out to just incorporate like the pursuit of happiness idea, where we're all supposed to be chasing this like perfect life, but let's think about the ways in which it's not perfect. Really resonates with me. We have the AIDS quilts in there, which obviously the AIDS epidemic was one of the largest issues in the world. And we have a lot of people who ask why the AIDS quilt panels are in that section rather than in the LGBTQ section. And it's because I wanted to make the conscious choice to focus on the healthcare aspect of people being denied the right to the resources they need to be able to live and function. There's a really interesting history there with the ability to get drugs for AIDS at that time that I would encourage listeners to go look more into. I think that the civil rights issue is obviously profound in this country. The works from Billy Morrow Jackson really speak to that well. And then a friend of mine from Penn State University actually wrote our civil rights panel there, Victoria McCullough Peoples. And then the immigration issue, that's been such a big thing, especially here locally. We've been having many protests for years now on ICE and keeping ICE out of our community. So thinking about the ways in which we need people to interact with that outside of just the news, because nobody likes the news. It's bad all the time. But if they come to a museum and they see a label that says that a nation of immigrants first started by John F. Kennedy in the 1950s, then they can kind of start to think about the ways in which that same idea has continued forward or maybe has fractured and changed over time.
Give us an overview of really what Spurlock Museum is about.
We want to use collections to connect people to ideas and topics that matter to them. And that can mean a bunch of different things. It can be something that matters very greatly, like healthcare or voting. And it can be also something that's a milder but enriching kind of thing, like, oh, I never knew this idea was so old or came from this other place, or that people on the other side of the world also do a certain thing or think a certain way. So connecting is important to us, and we're trying really hard to work on these temporary exhibits that will feel both immediately connected to people, but also will give them something to that will linger with them after they leave and hopefully will enrich their life in some way again, whether it's for some very pragmatic purpose or more a sort of curiosity or an interest or a hobby or whatever. And we want to do that by including many, many different voices and types of artifacts and artwork and images and texts and events. I haven't even really talked much about events. These are not just things in the museum. There's also opportunities to experience something simultaneously, right, with an artist, an expert of some kind, someone interpreting something. So these are all ways that we're trying to push our museum, and it's been a really fun set of changes. And I know Cope, you've been a Spurlock friend for a long time, and it sounds like you've seen some of the things that are different now. And for those of us who have worked here a long time, there's a few of us who have been here over 25 years, myself included. So it's very exciting to feel like we have a new place without having to move, you know.
One thing I want to add is that our collections are massive, and what people see on display
Yeah.
are a very small fraction. We have over about 60,000 or more artifacts here at the museum. And what is on display is obviously not 60,000 artifacts. So if people look on our website, we have a collections tab where they can actually go explore our entire collections rather than just what's on display. We also have researchers who come use our collections to do the research. Our frieze in the Ancient Med Gallery doesn't have the acid rain defects that the actual one in Greece has. It's a really important spot on campus for research, but also to connect to community, as Beth was saying, and really build out connections.
Yeah, and let your mind play, come in and just be interested in something. We haven't articulated this, but as a group, I don't think, but the idea of a third space, it's not home, it's not work, it's another space you can come be with other people, connect with them in some way, or just individually, but in a group, right? Or with multiple people, think about things, relax, be engaged, let an emotion come to the fore, experience something that inspires you or interests you in some way.
And you have a wide range of events, many of them for children and families. What are some that you've had recently?
Most recently, we just had a book club, a Revolutionary War tale that's also a romance novel called A Girl Called Samson. That went pretty well, I believe. For that, we had trivia night, which was, I'm a big trivia guy myself, and I really wanted to make it happen. Had a lot of fun hosting it. We had a good turnout. So we have a game night in July that we're going to host where we'll have little cards that are almost like object labels to talk about the history of these games. Like cornhole, for example, started in the 1400s. Would have never guessed. The Midwest sport actually started in Germany. And we have some guest speakers coming up in the fall. We're going to do a lot of programming on objects of hate and thinking about how museums ha hold on to these collections and for what purpose. We're going to have a Hamilton sing-along.
Yes, that's right. We're
Oh!
going. I forget which day that is, but yeah, keep
November
an
1st.
eye out. November 1st. Okay, so it'll be an afternoon and an evening, I believe. So like a family, kids who love Hamilton should come, and then there'll be another one in the evening if you can't stay out that late, because of course it's long, but
Dale, as a grad student, you have done quite a few of the exhibits at Spurlock. What has been the most valuable to your studies and what you plan to do when you're finished?
as Beth mentioned, I'm an agricultural historian. So a lot of the exhibits that I work on don't actually impact my research per se. I focus on the US beef industry. There's no direct impact in that way. However, I'm also a public historian. I got my master's in public history at Colorado State University. And I really care about making history accessible for general publics and reaching vast communities. I'm really interested in the Spurlock mission of basically, as Beth was saying, creating a safe space for people to come in, interact with these materials and ideas. And leave even just thinking differently. They don't have to fully change their beliefs or anything because they came to an exhibit and were struck by how genius the writing was. But I just want them to think about, critically think and engage with these historical moments and cultures across the globe, which is why I've been so gung-ho to work on as many exhibits as I can, and also have had a great opportunity to do that here at Spurlock between support from Beth and also our director and all the staff.
Dale and Beth, I thank you very much for a wonderful conversation about your exhibit Unfinished Revolutions and about the Spurlock in general and what a rich resource it is. Catch the Beat is brought to you in part by the listeners of WEFT and Jane Addams Bookshop in downtown Champaign. For more than 40 years, Jane Addams Bookshop has been a destination for readers and book lovers of all ages. Jane Addams Bookshop at 208 North Neal in downtown Champaign, online at janeadamsbooks.com. You're listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, streaming on weft.org. All episodes of Catch the Beat are archived on the WEFT website at weft.org under Public Affairs. You can also listen to live stream and archive shows on the WEFT app, available on your favorite app store. With thanks to Creative Commons for intro and outro music by Kevin MacLeod, see you next time.